Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews.
Thank you so much, Mike. I know this is a weekend of many festivals, starting with the 50th Octagon Art Festival that's in downtown Ames. You must have something about that, don't you, Susan?
Oh, yes, of course I do. The Octagon Art Festival is coming back this weekend after a pandemic hiatus. This will be the 50th anniversary. It's a major art festival, and it will be Sunday, September 26th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Approximately 80 juried artists from around the Midwest will fill downtown Ames. To give you a taste of what you will find at the festival, KHOI's Ursula Rudenberg chatted with Bonnie Ort, one of the artisans who will have a booth.
I'm speaking with Bonnie Ort, who is one of the people who's going to be at the Octagon Arts Festival this coming Sunday. Bonnie, I'm calling you in Haverhill, Iowa, correct?
Yeah, it's actually pronounced Haverhill.
Haverhill. Mm-hmm. And tell us where Haverhill is.
It is southwest of Marshalltown. It's only about 10 minutes from Marshalltown. So it's a very small, just one of these small Iowa little towns. We're actually about 3 miles southwest of Haverhill.
Well, tell us, for starters, what will you be selling at the Octagon Arts Festival? You are a fiber person.
I make hand-woven rugs, material rugs, and also different wool and fiber rugs from our own animals. We raise alpaca at our house here on our farm, and my daughter and son-in-law raise a couple of heritage breed sheep, the Navajo Churro and the Jacob Sheep breeds. And I utilize all of those wools, making rugs and hand-spun yarns and also needle felt artwork.
Needle felt artwork is what?
We utilize our wools. After shearing, we go through the cleaning process and the carding process and get the wools ready. I package those. I get some of the wools dyed different colors, and a lot of them are the natural colors. And what we do is, it's a special needle that you can use. It has tiny barbs on the end. You just press down a few strands at a time onto either a wool base or a material base, and you can make pictures. And I also teach classes on how to do this. I do a lot of beginner classes where we just have fun. I kind of show them some little secrets of ways to go about doing this, and it's all in the matter of laying down wools and pressing the wools into the base. And a lot of shading techniques go into this. It's kind of like painting with wool without the paints.
I think that's
amazing. Lay down the different colors and pressing it in.
I think that's amazing. Are these pictures that people frame afterwards, or what is it like? Or is it like a wall hanging, or is it
I go over that too. There's different ways you can frame these, and a lot of times I make pillows. I do the needle felting picture on a material on a pillow, and then sew the pillow cover. I do a lot of custom pet portraits for people, a lot of different animals.
You make portraits out of the wool?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And can you get a likeness that way?
I do. Yeah, I do. Amazing. a lot of personalized pictures for people. It makes it fun because it's kind of ends up being like a textured picture. You can make it as textured as you want, actually, with the fluffiness of the wool. Or you can press it in and make it a very solid, heavier duty type picture, so it can be utilized into a pillow.
And what's this called again?
Needle felting.
Needle felting. Is this a traditional art that has a history in the United States?
It's been around for a while. It's getting more and more common. A lot more people are learning about it. And I primarily do the 2D pictures with the needle felting technique. Some people can make the 3D objects into needle felting, and that's lots of different things you can do with wools.
Okay, and now you're from four generations of people that make rugs, right?
Yep. My grandmother taught me way back. She used to make lots of material rugs, like called rag rugs, and also jean rugs, which is made from refurbished jeans, and weaving them into very sturdy floor rugs. And so I still do quite a few of those. Then we kind of got into the wools and the fiber. Both my parents also wove. And my mom and I learned how to spin wool together a few years ago. And we just kind of got more interested in the wool capabilities of spinning and weaving and then now doing the needle felt artwork.
You will be selling wools at the Octagon Arts Fair as well, right?
Yes, I do package my wools too for other people that would like to utilize them, whether they're spinners that like to hand spin yarn or even just crafters that would need wool for some purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I have lots of different packages of wool rovings ready to go. And what we enjoy doing is we're small enough, we can personalize all of our items. We keep track after shearing which animal the fleece was taken off of when shorn, and all during the cleaning and the processing of the wools, I keep track of it. And the final product, we put the photo of the animal on the tag, just who it was from.
I think that's great. I really love that. So we're going to get back to the animals in a minute, but I wanted to ask you first, the wool that you sell and also the rugs, are they natural colors or do you also...
A lot of them are natural colors, but we do a little dyeing here at my home, but we're getting more and more sheep. My daughter and son-in-law raise the sheep at their home, and as their flock grows, it's getting a lot for me to process. So I take a lot of my wools to a local fiber mill by Maxwell. He does a wonderful job, and I tell him what colors I like, and he does a lot of the dyeing there because he's got a better setup for that. So we do have some bright colors, so then I can weave the rugs from that.
Do people buy your wools also to make sweaters?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing that wool. That sounds really lovely. I want to talk about the animals. You say that your daughter and her husband have a farm nearby, and it's called Faircloth Farms?
Correct. They raise a couple of heritage breeds, the Jacob sheep and the Navajo churro. They are a threatened species, part of the Livestock Conservancy Group, and they just got interested because of the very interesting background of these breeds.
You mentioned the Conservancy Group. That's the Shave 'em to Save 'em, is that right?
Yeah, within that conservancy group, they've established a fun program called Shave 'em to Save 'em. People that are knitters or crocheters or whatever, they can join this. It's kind of like a little fun group. They can see how many of the heritage breeds they can utilize and make fun objects out of the wools.
So the saving them refers to preserving heritage
preserving
breeds that
the
are
breed.
Dying.
Yep. Yep. Uh-huh. Getting more education and knowledge about these certain breeds. It's a knowledge out there and helps them expand the breeds themselves here in the United States. Mm-hmm. The Jacob sheep actually originates from the Middle East, and they have a very unique story. The biblical story of Jacob and the spotted sheep is known to be from that Middle East area, and it is this typically a black and white spotted sheep, and that's what these Jacob sheep are. That's where they originate.
The biblical character Jacob had sheep like this?
Yes. It is known that those breeds are still very, very common in that area. Typically, they are black and white spotted. But what's very unique about the Jacob sheep, they can grow anywhere between 2 to 6 horns. Some of them are very massive horns.
Does it all come out from one spot, like an antler? Or do literally different horns come out of different parts of the head of the sheep?
Well, if you have just the two main horns come out through the top, and then they can also grow these lateral horns out of the side. That go.
That's wild.
From the ears out. And, just if anybody's interested in that, stop by our booth. We'll love to show you some pictures of the animals.
Are these horns long or are they relatively short?
They come all different kinds. Sometimes they can get very, very long. Sometimes they kind of curl around.
And are
They're all different. The females can get the different horns also.
Wow. Are they aggressive animals?
No, that's why my kids decided to focus on this particular breed, because of their mellowness in attitude. They have very good dispositions on a whole, so that makes it easier to raise, especially if there's young kids around, which there are. My grandkids learned at a very young age how to take care of the livestock, and that makes it a little more reassuring. You always have to be careful around animals, but just knowing that they're not a very aggressive animal on a whole is just nice.
You also have the Navajo churro sheep. What is that?
Right.
Are they associated with the Navajo Indians?
I believe they are. This is another breed. It's on the threatened list of the Conservancy Group. They come from southwest United States. They're getting a few more of those into their program, so they do focus on just these two breeds.
So these are literally the animals that you get your wool from, right? You get your wool directly from the animals that you know.
Yes. On shearing day, we bag up each fleece, put their names on the bag, and we keep track of whose is whose all the way through the washing and the weaving process. So we try to customize it and keep each individual sheep's picture on the label of the finished product.
And where does the weaving happen?
At my house. I have a studio at my house where I weave and spin, and we do our felting classes here. So
you have looms in your house?
Right now I have three big floor looms all set up to do different weaving patterns.
It's kind of a complete world where you have the animals who are living on the farm and the alpaca are living with you. How many alpaca do you have?
I have four alpaca.
Uh-huh. Are they nice animals?
They're on a whole very easy keepers, but there are some health maintenance things you need to do to keep them in good health. And I took an alpaca management class before we even got into this, and I'd advise anyone to do that because they don't originate from the United States. So.
Okay, so you've got the Jacob sheep and the Navajo Churro sheep on your daughter's farm, and then you have the alpaca, and you have the looms in your house, and a place for you to do spinning. And then an area where people come for classes?
I also work with llama fiber. I have a friend that raises llamas, and I get her fleeces after she shears them. So we work primarily with those three species of wool, the llama, the alpaca, and the sheep's wool. And when I package my wools for needle felting, I'll put bits of each species fiber in the sample packs of fiber for people. And each one felts differently and has its own felting capabilities. It's just neat to feel the different wools, try to educate people and learning the difference about each type.
It's a beautiful description of this process that you have of being connected to what you're making from the beginning until the end.
A lot of hard work all the time, but this is fun. I really enjoy doing this. I enjoy it.
People that come to your classes, where do they come from?
Oh, we've had people come from quite a ways. Missouri, we've had them from Minnesota, and I've had a lot of people come from the Des Moines, Waukee area, from Winterset area. I've had people ranging from 7 years old to 90 years old coming to these classes. And you don't have to have an artistic background. It's just fun to do, and everybody's own personality can come out in this artwork.
A class that you take for a day, right?
2 to 3 hours is the advertised length of this class, but a lot of people stay longer and we just kind of have fun with it. So
that's very nice. Okay, and now you are coming to Ames on Sunday. You've been to the Octagon Art Festival before.
We've been there for quite a few years now, and we enjoy it. We get a lot of people that come by each year, kind of a repeat people that stop by and just chat, and it's interesting and it's fun just to tell people about how we make these things and just to kind of educate people in the fiber world, in the wool, what all the wools can be used for.
And you'll have pictures of the Jacob sheep and the Navajo Churro sheep there, right, to see?
Yes, we will.
That's what I want to see.
Okay.
So you're going to, and it's going to be a reunion because obviously we've all been separated from each other for a while. So this is a joyful reunion, hopefully, with you and the people that appreciate your work. And what booth are you going to be at?
We are at booth 60.
Booth 60.
Toward the west end of the street.
Well, I've been speaking with Bonnie Ort, and thank you, Bonnie, for taking a few minutes to really paint this amazing story of what you're doing in Haverhill, Iowa, and your connection to the animals and to the craft and to sharing it with people, right?
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed doing this.
As a craftsperson and an artist who has really made this your life, what do you say to the person who is inspired by what you're doing?
I guess just go for your dreams. Never too old to learn something new. I found that out. And if something interests you, just learn it and just keep trying.
I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bonnie Ort is one of the artists who is going to be at the Octagon Arts Festival, which is going to be happening again after a pandemic hiatus. the Octagon Arts Festival on Sunday, September 26th in downtown Ames, and it'll be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It will be on Main Street and Douglas Avenue, and if you want more information, you can, I think the easiest thing is to Google Octagon Arts Festival. They do have a map up on the web, on their website, which shows you where all the artists are, but there will be maps at the festival too. There are going to be all sorts of different artisans showing their work, including painting, ceramics, wood, drawing, glass, fiber, mixed media, metal, jewelry, sculpture. Somebody's doing henna, printmaking, photography, and much, much more. So looks like it's going to be a beautiful day for the annual Octagon Arts Festival here in downtown Ames. I've been Ursula Rudenberg reporting. Daughter of the woman who started the Octagon Arts Festival. My beautiful mother, Veronica Rudenberg, started this festival, and today it has grown into the 50th annual Octagon Arts Festival. So there you go, Mom. 50 years. Look what you started. Back to you, Susan.
This year, a Chalk the Block contest is going to be introduced to the festival by Ames Public Arts Commission. This is a chalk art contest located on Burnett Avenue, just north of Tom Evans Park. It will begin at 10 a.m. The contest is open to everyone. There are three categories: youth, ages 12 and younger, teen, 13 to 17, and adult, ages 18 and older. Chalk will be provided to the first 25 people to register. Everyone else will need to provide their own chalk. Soft pastel or any non-permanent medium that will wash away with the rain are other options to use. Contestants will have a 4x4-foot square space in which to create their chalk drawing. Judging will be at 2 p.m. Register for the contest by emailing publicartscommission@cityofames.org. That's publicartscommission@cityofames.org with your name, age group, address, phone number, and email address. Space is limited, so register as soon as possible. Same-day registration may be possible if space is available. For more information about the Octagon Art Festival, including a festival map, live entertainment acts, and a list of participating artists, you can visit arts.org. That's the hot link, arts.org. Also, the festival organizers are low on volunteers, so if you can help them out, please contact the Octagon. It will be a fun way to spend the day in beautiful weather celebrating the wonder of art.
It's a mixed up world.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and Ursula Rudenberg has been interviewing Bonnie Ort, one of the artists at the 50th Octagon Art Festival. But on this lovely weekend, rural areas as well as towns are sprouting events for those who want to get out in the country. This is the weekend of the Junkathon, Friday through Sunday. Let's talk to a couple of people as our guides.
So my name is Nan Bonfils. I'm standing here with my best floral friend, Sandy Gossman. Sandy is from Ames. I'm from rural Madrid, and we're standing out here on my farm, and we're wrapping up our efforts to put together our art projects that we will be selling at Lincoln View Farm this weekend. And that'll be part of the Junkathon.
Oh, what is the Junkathon?
Well, the Junkathon is a road tour of various places where people like to buy repurposed and vintage and fresh art efforts. And we are lucky enough to be the guests of Nancy Briggs at Lincoln View Farm, which is one stop on the Junkathon. We're selling the things that we have created to benefit the Iowa Arboretum.
How will they benefit the Iowa Arboretum?
Well, for many years, we have done classes at the Arboretum in making wreaths, arrangements, all kinds of things. But with COVID, we can't get that done anymore. And then the derecho hit us. So we have tried the last couple years to just raise some money as we can to help the Arboretum.
Yeah, this project in particular, this 2021 autumn project, is the perfect partner for Lincoln View Farm because Nancy Briggs there specializes in shade-loving perennials. And we have dedicated that all of the profits of the sale from our projects will go to the restoration and renovation of the hosta gardens at the Iowa Arboretum, one of which was hit particularly hard by the derecho. Anything that anybody buys from us, Nancy Briggs will ring it up on her cash register, but at the end of the 3 days, she will pay us back for all of the things that we brought, and that money goes to the Iowa Arboretum.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful project. What are the days that people can go to this?
Friday and Saturday from 9 to 5, and Sunday from 11 to 3.
Well, it sounds like there's so much going on this weekend. It's good that you have 3 days.
Probably.
Well, people can just enjoy the outdoors in lots of homes or in gardens this weekend and be safe.
Thank you both so much for sharing this exciting event with us.
It's our pleasure. We hope to make a lot of new friends and see some old ones, too, at Lincoln View Farm this weekend.
Driving into Ogden, we were met by Megan Ulrich, who's telling us about Oktoberfest here in Ogden next weekend.
Next Sunday is our Ogden Legacy event in the city park in Ogden. So that's Sunday, October 3rd from 11:30 to 3 p.m. Lots going on there too. We've got live music from Corey Highland. He's an acoustic musician out of Boone. Tons of activities for the kids. We've got hay rides, ambulance and fire truck tours. The Lions Club has bingo. And we asked various community organizations and businesses to come just kind of set up carnival style games like spin the wheel, ring toss, that type of thing for the kids to do. And we also have an inflatable like bounce house thing. So that's all free for the kids. And then there's some adult fun as well. We've got obviously the bingo. Our local fitness studio, Hammer Time Fitness, is going to have a mini dance class out there. And we've also got 14 vendors, like craft fair style vendors, and an ice cream truck and Cook's Snack Shack out of Boone will be serving up lunch out there. So we've also got Hilltop Greenhouse, which is our local greenhouse. We'll be selling mums and other plants as well. So all those kids' activities are free. Good, just beautiful fall afternoon to come spend with your family in Ogden.
Well, so if people haven't had enough of a festival this weekend at Ames, they know that there's still a festival to go to.
Right. Definitely. Yep.
Well, that is, you've got a lot to celebrate over there in Ogden.
That's for sure. We're keeping busy.
Well, will that be the first one, or is this a regular occurrence?
No. I've been on the committee about 3 years. It's put on by our Ogden Legacy organization, which is just a group in town that tries to better the community and focus on economic development. So bringing businesses to town, bringing people to town. And I'm on the promotions and marketing committee that runs this Oktoberfest event, as well as our Christmas on Main Street event. So yeah, like I said, I've been doing it 3 years, but it's been going on for a number of years. I've only lived in this area about 10 years, but we've been trying to get a hold of somebody that can find out when it started. So that tells me it's been quite a while.
Well, you have another event coming up about the same time. And I wasn't able to get anybody to talk to me specifically about that, But I will flash back a little bit because I've been visiting Ogden for several years. And when I first started visiting, I was particularly struck by your charming vintage grocery store. And of course, there are not many of those around. And it was such a delightful place to go. And then it burned down. And I, even though I haven't been back to see the wreckage, I just could, you know, my heart ached for Ogden because I could see what a horrible loss this would be. And I understand there's going to be a groundbreaking for a new grocery store, a real grocery store, not a fresh market or something, but a real grocery store. Could you want to tell us a little about when that is and what's going on with that?
Yeah, we're super excited. We had our small town grocery store was Clark's. It was locally owned for quite a while, and that was sold to a new owner. And unfortunately, shortly after they took ownership, the whole place burned down. So we kind of went through some heartache with that grocery store initially, you know, closing business, changing hands, and then burning down. So Ogden Legacy really came together and worked with community partners, reaching out to different entities, trying to get somebody to fill that void in our town. And they just announced this week that we have secured Fairway to come to town. So I don't have the opening, but I know that they will be breaking ground right away. So we're super excited to see what that brings into something like that back in our community. So we're really looking forward to it.
I didn't hear clearly. This is a Fairway, right?
Yes, it's Fairway. Mm-hmm.
And yep. So I guess probably a lot of people from Ogden have been going down to Boone to go to the Fairway down there.
Yeah. We're just about a 10 or 15 minute drive from Boone. So that would be our closest grocery store, which is obviously where Fairway is headquartered. So I think had some connections there, but also I think it shows Fairway's commitment to smaller towns like us, that they're willing to come into a smaller community and put something up, not just to benefit it, but to benefit the town as well. So we're really looking forward to that. And
we'll be watching to see how you're doing, because I know it's hard for a grocery store to make it in a town the size of Ogden, but I know it's also super important.
Like I said, I've only lived in Ogden about 10 years, but one thing I have seen in this town is we will support local businesses and come out and support the community. Just talking about vintage a little bit, we also have a roller skating rink that I'm not sure how long it's been around, but you and I, Sue, talked about how our grocery store was kind of walking back in a time warp. And I'll say the same thing about our roller skating rink. So that's another great reason to come to Ogden. Come skate at our vintage roller skating rink. It's pretty neat.
Oh, and I understood from our conversation that you have some other new stores in Ogden. Is that
especially with COVID, we've been pretty blessed to have a couple new storefronts on Main Street, or some that have changed hands a little bit. We have the New Moon Mercantile is a fairly newer store that's kind of a little gift shop in there. Another one in town just opened called Honey Nut Home. It's two sisters that make some wooden crafts, and they've offered a lot of little kids craft workshops. Limited hours, so you'll want to check their website, but that's right next door to New Moon Mercantile. There's an electronic shop just opened in town. We've got a new barber shop in the past couple years, Joe's Haircuts. And what else? Our flower shop just changed hands. That's Everlastings in Ogden. And actually, the one thing going on in town in Ogden this weekend is their grand opening is on Saturday. So I'm super excited to see what they've done with that space, because I know they've done a lot of remodeling in there. And they've got paper over the windows, so it's just making me super curious, because I really want to see how they decorate that and update it. So yeah, quite a bit going on for our small town.
Yeah. And we used to go to the Lucky Pig. Yeah.
Yep. They're known for their tenderloins. So that's a big draw to our town as well. But yeah, great food.
Yeah. We first covered that for a New Year's Eve when they had, we were covering entertainments, and they had managed to get a pretty good band there. And I remember that was, you could sort of tell, okay,
yeah,
who's going to get this band?
Right. They've got, something newer going on there too. They've got a new party room there that is available to rent out. That's really nice. So that's a nice space to have in town as well.
It really sounds nice. I'm glad to have this update on Ogden.
And
hope to make it over for a road trip sometime. So
that would be great. We appreciate you helping us promote our community.
Well, we appreciate having so many vibrant communities around our listening area. So thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay. I think it's, I appreciate your coming, Megan, and that it's been great visiting about Ogden, but let's take a music break with Tecumseh by Peter Ostrusko before our final segment. That was Tecumseh by Peter Ostrusko, and this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And we're ending our show with some complications of the new normal of COVID. We expected that we'd be able to go to the theaters, restaurants, sporting events with only mild precautions. And actually, listening to the festivals this weekend, why, it sounds like we don't have much to worry about. As the second half of Capital Week discusses, instead of our children returning to in-person classes, we're embroiled in lawsuits between our governor's ban on mask mandates by city governments and school boards and organizations concerned with mandating masks to protect students and staff in schools. If you listen to Capital Week at noon today, you will hear an in-depth discussion of these issues. Now, of course, if you're listening this evening, you'll have to catch it somewhere else, but it's quite an unusual thing to end Capital Week with.
I think this is a good introduction to a startling prediction by our last guest, who is Dr. Mark Allen Deary, an infectious disease specialist and public health specialist in New Orleans, Louisiana. And he's affiliated with multiple hospitals in the area, including the University Medical Center in New Orleans and the Tulane Health System in New Orleans. He's worked internationally in the area of infectious disease in practice for over 20 years. During the coronavirus pandemic, he has worked on the front lines caring for COVID-19 patients, and he's also a major source of public information. Let's hear what Dr. Deary has to tell us about what to expect.
The Delta variant is a harbinger of things to come. That's kind of how I would start thinking about it. What we are seeing with the original variant, which we refer to as the wild type. So you'll hear me refer to as the wild type virus or the strain that emerged out of Wuhan. And if you think about a pebble that you drop into a pond of water, you have the first ring and then you start to have rings that emanate outside of that. The alpha variant that emerged out of the UK was more infectious. It was about 60% more infectious than the strain that emerged out of Wuhan, the wild type. But the vaccine still protected you from it. Now, remember, the vaccine was created, but the vaccine, the ingredients to make that vaccine were cooked up using the wild type strain. That was the cookbook, if you will, that they utilized. So then you had alpha. Well, alpha was so close. It was one ring, you know, it was one jump from the original wild type virus. So it protected us. And for those that were vaccinated, they were protected. And also they did not transmit virus, right? So they were protected from infection and did not transmit. And of course, it protected you from severity of illness as well as mortality. Now we're the next ring out, which is Delta. Right. And Delta, now we lost the ability to be protected from getting infected. That's what the vaccine did for the first two variants. Right. Now we're in our third major variant and people can still get the Delta variant. They could still transmit the variant without even they could be asymptomatic or asymptomatic. The variant produces 1,000 times more virus than the alpha and the wild type variant did. And also at the same time is 60% more infectious than alpha. So additive, 120% more infectious than the wild type virus. Now, what the vaccine does do, it does protect people from having severity of illness and it does protect people from dying. And what am I seeing in the COVID wards? I haven't had a day off, and I'm not saying that to, it's just that every single day I'm in the COVID wards. The chief medical officer of the state, Dr. Joseph Cantor, tells this story pretty regularly. He's an ER doctor as well as the chief medical officer of the state. He saw a patient, and that person had just had a heart attack. Now, as we know, time is muscles, what we say in medicine. So the minute if you have a heart attack or a brain attack, a stroke, you need to be seen urgently so they can open up that clot so that blood can flow through so you don't infarct precious heart tissue or brain tissue. This guy was moved around to six different hospitals and before he was finally able to be seen. Now, it wasn't because the hospitals were packed. They are, and they were. But it was because there was lack of hospital staff, because hospital staff is now burning out significantly as a result of doing this for some 22 months. And so nursing has become a big issue. So this person got moved around in southeastern Louisiana because hospitals are literally bursting at the seams. At the same time, we're losing significant healthcare workers as well. Obviously, southern Louisiana, New Orleans are canary in the coal mine, and we have seen a huge rise of cases. We peaked out probably sometime last week. You could just kind of feel it, but we're seeing a lot of young people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, a majority of them, about 95% or so, are unvaccinated. That's the number the CDC has been saying. That's been my personal experience in taking histories. It's a very important point about climate change relevant to COVID as well. And when I say, why didn't you get a vaccine? You know, now they know they're talking to an infectious disease doctor. You can't come up with any of your crazy conspiracy, whatever, but it's all the same. They all say the same thing to me. I didn't think it would happen to me. And that's it right there, because they didn't think it could happen to them. And you could just see that they're looking at me and they're just saying, because, you know, I'm the infectious disease doctor coming in, right? And I'm starting them on all the steroids and the remdesivir and the baricitinib and all the different medications that have some of the meds work. You know, the steroids are helpful, but it's really just oxygen and a prayer. And so when they are struggling to breathe and you see that fear in their eyes, what you actually really see is I made the wrong decision. And when I say that this is a harbinger of things to come, I'm concerned. Last summer, we had five hurricanes lined up in the Gulf. And what I am fearful of is that behind Delta is another. They're talking about Lambda and they're talking about Mu behind that. And we're already starting to see evidence that Lambda may have some vaccine evasiveness associated with that. What does that mean? That means that the vaccine that we took, that again, originally was built and created to protect us from the wild type virus, may not be as effective for viruses that are yet to come. But the good thing about these mRNA vaccines is that they can be made very quickly and they don't need to do the same testing processes. So they just say, okay, here's the new virus. Boom. Let's create the new cocktail, if you will. They can create that literally overnight. But as Delta comes to each of your states, you guys will start to see there was a state fair in Iowa. So I expect that you're going to start seeing cases there very soon. Of course, in southern South Dakota, there was a major motorcycle rally. We're seeing cases skyrocket in South Dakota as well.
That was Dr. Mark Allen Derry, epidemiologist who sent the broadcast from radio station KHIV in New Orleans. We wanted to follow up with an Iowa journalist who has some experience with getting out COVID information to Iowa audiences. Dana James, founder of Black Iowa News, is with us. Thank you for joining us today, Dana.
Thank you so much.
That was a pretty upsetting interview we just heard. Did you have a chance to hear it also, Dana?
Yes, I did hear a little bit about the doctor talking about the potential for the variants in the future to, you know, the effect that it's going to have on the vaccines and, you know, vaccines waning and things like that. So, yes, that is kind of startling for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of a heavy report and pretty alarming. Didn't there's so many people still unwilling to get vaccinated?
Yeah, I mean, with the vaccines, especially in me covering the Black community in Iowa for Black Iowa News on bulletin.com. But, you know, there are, you know, some very legitimate reasons that in the Black community in particular has for not being vaccinated. You've got the ones that we know, the legacy of medical experimentation on Blacks, you know, with like Henrietta Lacks and the HeLa cells, the theft of those cells. You've got Tuskegee, of course, that everyone's super familiar with. You have, you know, some of the experimentation and sterilization that was done on immigrant women, you know, just a few years back in detention facilities. You have lack of access to the vaccines in terms of people not necessarily being able to get time off work to go get vaccinated. People feeling like they may, you know, if they had side effects, they're worried about potentially, you know, time off work and are you going to get paid for that time off work? So there's a lot that goes into the hesitancy that's out there. But certainly, you know, we're what, 9 months out from the vaccines hitting in Iowa. And that's a lot of time that I feel like people have had to overcome their objections to getting vaccinated. Now, the people who aren't getting vaccinated, it's very clear that, you know, they've given in to this disinformation and misinformation that's out there, and they've just kind of dug in their heels and don't want to get it. So how we move past that at this point, it's going to have to be things like the vaccines being mandated by the federal government, which you recently saw Biden do that. And so you're going to have these businesses start to require vaccinations. And that's how we're going to get to where we get more people vaccinated.
Now, one suggestion that I heard for the meatpacking plants was that they, since the unions are involved with this, negotiate time off to deal with the side effects that people may be getting after their vaccinations. And I don't know about those side effects. I was vaccinated twice and I'm 82 years old and I didn't have any problems. So it's, I guess it's sort of what problems you've seen around you that cause you to have anxieties?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, that's great that you didn't have any side effects. And by and large, the medical information that I've read, you know, the side effects, most people don't have side effects. But when you do have them, yes, you know, it affects you, and people tend to share that information. I know I had side effects, minor side effects with the first shot. The second shot was a little more challenging. But one of the doctors that I quoted in one of my stories from the University of Iowa, I really loved what she said, and that was Dr. Dale Castillo. And she said, you know, when it comes to the side effects, you have to view it like, you know, this is temporary, you know, this will pass. But the benefits of getting the vaccine so outweigh some, you know, really minor inconvenience, minor effects. I mean, you know, it's always been, you know, life or death. It still is. And, you know, in a community that is especially vulnerable, we just have to talk through it. You know, we just have to work through it with people, like one conversation at a time, one vaccination clinic at a time. And that's really what, you know, I've seen a lot of people here in Des Moines. That's what we're doing, is, you know, still trying to talk through things with people. So, you know, the goal is to get more people vaccinated. The goal is to not have this decimate communities, not have, you know, particularly the Black community saddled with long COVID effects, not have them saddled with, you know, medical debt and things like that. So, you know, it's just something we have to keep talking about and keep pushing.
Yeah. And of course, when you do know someone who is dying, and they say, get vaccinated, you understand that that's very persuasive, but that's not the way you want to convince people.
No, definitely not. And, you know, here in Des Moines, and I think we talked a little bit about this the last time, where everybody is, you know, knowing more people recently in the Black community in Des Moines, two people died. One was pretty young of COVID. I think she was 31. The other one was 56. He was well known, well loved by people. And I wrote about him recently. And I think some of that really starts to hit home for people. You know, also what people's objections to getting vaccinated, you know, is ultimately it's going to affect the children as well. Because if the adults are still staunchly not wanting to get vaccinated, you know, the more vaccination becomes available to children, you know, that's also another issue. I mean, in order to protect, you know, the current generations and future generations, we need to see Black adults, Black children getting vaccinated. And so I feel like if at this point, you know, people aren't motivated by all the many reasons there are to get vaccinated, I hope that some of these really, you know, unfortunate, awful, sad stories do serve to kind of shake them up. And when you know someone, you know, who's been hospitalized, one of my friends, her daughter was only 28, and she was hospitalized a couple times in her bout with it. So, you know, it's striking close to home. It's striking close to home in terms of some of the businesses that have let up on their mitigation tactics. You know, a lot of businesses, at least I hear around Des Moines, you know, they're not, quote unquote, quarantining people. You know, people have that close exposure. They're still coming to work. We have vaccines that work. We have vaccines that are readily available to people. So I really hope that we can turn the corner coming up and make some real progress on this. You know, I think it's startling that we're still only at, what, about 50, slightly over 50% of Iowans that are vaccinated, fully vaccinated. Is that right?
I think that's right, yes.
You know, it's just to me, I mean, I recall when I got vaccinated back in March, you know, clamoring for the vaccine, was so, you know, wanting to get it, not wanting to. It's one thing to die from COVID. It's another thing to potentially experience some effects at home or be hospitalized. So, you know, definitely when the vaccines came out, it was like you wanted to take dying off the table. And, you know, by and large, that's what the vaccines, you know, do. You know, the numbers of them vaccinated who are hospitalized and, you know, who die is still, that's the majority of people that COVID is really affecting. You know, there are those breakthrough cases, but by and large, the breakthrough cases are very rare still, even though you may still see a lot of headlines about breakthrough cases. But if you look on the CDC's website, you know, the breakthrough cases aren't, they're rare. And so, you know, getting vaccinated is the best way out of this. You know, even though when you look at Iowa, sometimes it appears when you look at all these big events, when you look at, you know, when you're mingling out, when I'm in the city, when I'm downtown, you know, it looks like everything's normal, but it really isn't. And so we've got to make some progress, more progress on this.
Well, thank you very much for your help with this. And I really appreciate your writing and your coming on KHOI to talk to our listeners.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. And it's time now to sign off. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Gina McAndrews and myself, Susan Friends, and with Ursula Rudenberg as our roving reporter. Our guests include Bonnie Ord, Megan Eldridge,
Nan Bonfils,
Mark Allen Derry, and Dana James.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At noon, you can hear a rebroadcast of Capital Week, originally aired Monday evening at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell all your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.